It is January the 17th, time for Trade Talk, the second episode of something that hopefully goes for more than two episodes. Joining me today will be Raphael Johnson. We will get straight into some trade discussions, players that we want to talk about, players that you want to talk about. Let's just get into it, shall we? This is Trade Talk. Let's go. Balls deep.
I'm the type to get shit done. You the type to observe. March Madness on my speakers, but today's November 23rd. Cause I'm loud in the blunt, yeah. I do and say what I want, yeah. Probably somewhere sunny and tan. Foreign women in the sun, yeah.
That's all that I need. That's all that I need. That's all that I need. Got my brothers with me. Got my brothers with me.
Welcome to the Balls Deep podcast brought to you by Fantasy Basketball International. I'm Adam King. Find me on Twitter and on Blue Sky at AdamKing91. Find us on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, anywhere, everywhere you consume fantasy basketball content. We are part of the Old Man Squad at Old Man Squad on Twitter. Let's bring Raph straight in. Raph, thank you for squeezing me into your busy Friday afternoon, Eve? Yeah, afternoon schedule. Still afternoon.
Oh, good. Happy to be on and have a little trade conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I did the first episode last week with Michael Waterloo. We had some connection issues, which I don't seem to have today. So that was just a random thing. So hopefully people can actually see the screen today, because that was, I know last week that was a bit of an issue. So I'm sure people will let me know if they can't. But let's start with our players that we want to talk about. So we've bought a few each. Who's the first player that you wanted to talk about in terms of trade value?
I think for me, it has to be Zion Williamson. The availability has certainly been a concern this year. And that's negatively impacted the value. You know, if he's not available, there's only so much he can do. And even when he is available, I think some of the things that we kind of expect him to not bring to the table, like three-point shooting and whatnot, and free throw percentage, I think those have been a bit – those haven't been the only issues for him in terms of fantasy value. So it's one of those things where he's well outside of the top 100, but you're certainly going to ask for higher value. The question is, how high can you potentially go, especially on a team that – they haven't pulled the plug yet, but it doesn't seem to be much hope for the Pelicans right now.
No. And they've got no Eve Misi tonight as well. Yeah. So we'll see whether they're happy to play Zion a little bit of center or something. But here's a couple of trades that have happened in the last 24 hours for Zion. The top one is very interesting. Zion for Joel Embiid. I don't really want either of those guys, but... Yeah. Are there sort of any that jump off here? So the one-for-ones are obviously easier to have a look at and break down. So Joel Embiid, Ivica Zubac, if we've got any other one-for-ones, Scotty Barnes, Evan Mobley, there's quite a few actually, Sabonis, Embiid again. So I guess if we're looking at these names, and there's quite a few, Embiid, Zubac, Barnes, Mobley, Sabonis, Amen Thompson. Like, would you have Zion in any of those?
No. Wait, maybe like I consider Amen Thompson, but I don't think I'd have him in even that trade. Like the Evan Mobley one just smells of collusion, because I don't know why you would give up Evan Mobley for Zion Williamson.
No.
Even if Ivica Zubac has been much improved in terms of fantasy and real value this year, and we've seen what Amin's done since the Jabari Smith injury. Sabonis has been an elite fantasy guy too. So I don't know. Like, obviously, these public leagues or whatnot can be a bit tricky in terms of everything, but some of these trades, these one-for-ones that you listed off, just seem absolutely wild to me in terms of who would give up those players for Zion Williamson at this point.
What about the Embiid one? Would you have Zion over Embiid?
I think that's the one I would consider. Like when Embiid's available, he's clear of Williamson in terms of value. The issue is that we don't know when he's going to be available. You know, first it was the foot. Now he's down another 7 to 10 days with the knee. So that's one I would certainly consider doing if I was receiving Zion in return. But the other side, I don't know if I'd want Embiid at this point. That would be like the one thing about that trade.
There's a collusion one for you. Shay
Will just comes on. Come on, man.
Well, I don't think we need to talk about that. Surely not. All right, so I'm going to go with – well, I'll just pull up – so this screen here, this is the most traded players in the last 24 hours. So Julius Randle, I think, is an interesting one because nothing has really changed for him. He is who he is. His role is the same. He's not someone I'm particularly high on. Ja Morant, who's out – well, questionable tonight with another injury, just one thing after another. For him, which is a bit unfortunate. I was trying to find a Knicks player so we could talk about a Knicks player. All right, I'll put one in there. I want to talk about Karl Anthony Towns. Let's see if he has been traded. Only seven, so there's not that many. Have we got any one for one? We don't have any one for ones either. I guess just talking about Cat more generally speaking, because and you're the Knicks expert. What are you sort of this thumb thing that he's got going on, which was a sprain but has a bit of a bone chip in it? Are you worried that this is something that could cause him to miss any amount of time moving forward, or something you can just play through?
I think I'm in the middle on that. Like, you know, at first glance, I believe he can play through it, but on the flip side, it's not like you can direct the bone chip on where to go within the thumb. You know, if it gets jarred or something, what's that going to impact? So I don't know if he'll be able to help you, like, say, in the short term, because I think he might miss another game or two. But I think overall he should be okay. And with Towns, you kind of bet on him having at least one extended absence per season. So I think that's how it's worked out in recent years for him. You kind of hope it's the thumb and not like a lower body injury that keeps him out for an extended period, if anything.
Yeah, and I think I've talked about this on my show. I feel like Domantas Sabonis played through something similar a couple of years ago. I don't know if it was a thumb or a finger, but he had some sort of a fracture or something. But I don't even know if he missed a game. He might have missed one, but he was able to just play through it. So I can't remember exactly what the injury was.
I just pulled it up. It was an avulsion fracture in his right thumb. Now, he's left-handed.
Okay.
So that may have had something to do with him playing through it. Well,
yep.
Cat's right thumb injury, and he's right-handed. So that might be the difference there.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about Jimmy Butler. There's not a huge sort of sample size here, but we can just talk about him a little bit more in general as well. So Jimmy Butler for Jordan Poole, Jimmy Butler for Shaedon Sharpe. I mean, where are you on Jimmy Butler? He's available tonight. He's not on the injury report. I haven't seen anything come out in the last little bit about the fact that he won't be playing. Do you think, well, I guess there's a lot of layers to this question. Do you think he plays? Do you think he starts? And what's the future for Jimmy Butler? I know we're not fortune tellers, but what are your thoughts?
I don't think they can play him from a team chemistry standpoint, but I do wonder about like the collective bargaining agreement and whether or not they have to. I don't know. You obviously can't tell a coach to put a player on the floor. Like, you can't go that far, but I don't know, with a star player, maybe there's a different way that the league looks at this. They had kind of an up and down road trip, but they had some positives, you know, with some of those other guys, Nikola Jovic, Jaime Jaquez Jr., Tyler Hero, those guys playing better basketball. And I don't know if you want to risk that even in the lesser of the two conferences from a playoff standpoint. So I don't see him playing starters minutes. You know, maybe he'll get out there, but I don't know. I have a hard time believing they're going to have him taking on that number one role that he had before all this went down.
So if you were someone who had picked up Jovic or maybe Highsmith to a lesser extent in the last week, would you just hold? Because I know obviously if Jimmy Butler was to come back and start and play 30 minutes, he probably impacts those guys. But given the uncertainty here, I'm holding those guys.
Absolutely.
If you have him on your roster, I don't know whether you have him at all. I don't. Would you be looking to move him now, or is now as good a time as any to try and move him?
It might be too late, just because he's made it clear he doesn't want to be there anymore. The Heat have said they've been open for business. Whether or not they find a deal between now and the trade deadline is another matter. But yeah, I think as soon as things started to go left, even before the suspension, was the time where you wanted to trade him. You may be able to move him now if you can kind of sell an owner on, look, he's going to be on the floor, but we don't know that. So I think if he gets out there and plays relatively well, this is certainly a great time to trade him off of the strength of that one performance. But yeah, I would not want to have him rostered.
No. All right, we've got some questions coming in, but let's who was the next player you thought we could chat about?
I actually have Josh Hart written down on my list.
Okay.
He's been outstanding this year, and he's kind of someone in category leagues where you probably want to hold on to him, if anything, and because he should have a pretty high asking price in terms of his production versus what you get in return.
So there's, I'm not even going to try and attempt to dissect that trade with 10 players in it. But, I mean, this one's a sort of interesting one, this first one here, Josh Hart for Chet Holmgren and Bilal Coulibaly. Obviously, Chet is the preferred per-game guy there. Coulibaly, I think, has been rosterable. He's a little bit up and down, but he's playing pretty consistent minutes. Who would you rather there? Like, I guess this probably comes down to when do you think Chet returns?
Yeah. I think in terms of upside, I think I'd rather have the Chet Coulibaly situation. You know, it sounds like Chet's making strides in his recovery. So you're betting on him, like, after the All-Star break and the fantasy playoff time, kind of being the Chet Holmgren we've gotten used to seeing when he's been on the floor. But yeah, that's certainly a risky one because we know Josh Hart's going to get you probably a double-double on most nights. If not, he can get you some triple-doubles as well. Solid percentages, the defensive stats are there too. So it's certainly a risky move, but I think Chet Holmgren's upside, that would be one that I would strongly consider doing. Probably even doing it based on whether or not if he's back on the court taking the next steps in his recovery right now pretty soon.
So here's a question just from Steve while we're talking about Chet, and you've sort of said that you think he will. Do we think Chet makes it back for the fantasy playoffs? I think he does. And it sounds like you do as well. Yep.
Yes.
I don't think he's back before the All-Star break, though. I sort of had that as a tentative kind of once the All-Star break is done, they probably ease him back in. A question I've had a couple of times on my show relates to Isaiah Hartenstein. How do you think, because we haven't really seen the two play together. We came into the season with expectations on what each would be able to do. Do you think that Hartenstein can maintain, because he's been very good, do we think he can maintain or does he take a significant hit once Chet is back?
I think he can. I don't know if he'll be like top 50 good, which is what he's been approaching when on the floor, but I don't think 75 to 100 is unrealistic for him with playing alongside Chet because they have different skill sets. You know, Chet's one offensively. He can float a bit more on the perimeter, while Hartenstein, he's going to be screening and diving to the basket, give you some secondary playmaking as well. So the skill sets are a bit different there. So for that reason, I think Hartenstein, I don't think he's going to drop off too much if those two are back on the floor together at some point.
All right. Now, my second name I actually saw on here. Where is it? Oh, here it is. RJ Barrett. I wanted to talk about him. So let's go back to here. And I think it's been a successful season for RJ, if we wanted to compare it to previous years. But just because we've had such a not a huge sample size, but we've had a few years of RJ Barrett being more of a points league asset and issues with percentages, which are still there, but the assists have been very interesting this year. So here are some one-for-ones. Zach LaVine, Emmanuel Quickley, Buddy Hield. Oh, we don't need to talk about that one. Derek White, DeJounte. I guess where do you sort of view RJ rest of season? Is he comparable to guys like Derek White, Jordan Poole? I'm not going to do Buddy Hield, as I said. Emmanuel Quickly is an interesting one, actually, because he's been frustrating. Let's call him frustrating.
Yes.
Who would you rather there, Barrett or Quickly?
Well, Barrett's had better availability, so I think that kind of swings it in his favor, immediately. Of the other guys you mentioned, I think I would consider Jordan Poole. I think Derek White may be too much to give up for RJ Barrett in terms of what Derek brings to the table. But Poole, you can certainly swing that. And he's someone that I don't think he's necessarily shutdown proof, but they don't have to put him on the bench to not play well. Like, we've seen enough evidence from the Wizards where they can let him kind of do his thing and they'll still be poor. So I think Poole would be one that I would certainly, be willing to make a move on.
I've had questions as well from people just regarding, I guess, Quickly, Barrett, Scotty Barnes. Do we think the Raptors are a shutdown tank sort of candidate? Because to me, they don't seem to be that kind of a team. But do you think there's a chance that they will get to the point with Emmanuel Quickly specifically and just say, you've had so many injuries, just take the rest of the season off, get your body healthy for next year? Or do you think, because to me, I like their young core. I think they have some good building blocks here, but they just haven't spent time on the court together because of injuries. So it would make sense that you'd want to get them out there, get some chemistry ahead of next season. But I mean, where do you stand on that issue?
I can certainly see that, just because you want those guys to get reps in, just so you have like a big enough sample size going into the off season to understand what you may need to do in terms of the draft and free agency, to get pieces around them or potentially move someone if it doesn't work. So I can see that. On the flip side, I look at that roster and some of the young perimeter players they have, like Jacoby Walter, Grady Dick, even Ochai Agbaji. Those are guys that, while those three have played, those two, last two I mentioned, have played a lot of basketball this season, there may be decisions made to get them more time on the floor too, because this current group, the core you mentioned, while talented, when on the floor, I don't think they've done enough to have that front office say, these are the guys we're definitely going to build around beyond Scotty Barnes at this point.
I agree, and hopefully that is the way that they're thinking, but as we know that we don't always agree with the front offices and all right, we've got a couple of questions coming in here. So let's bring them up. Let's do this one. So this is a 17 points league. So I get questions from Fat Cookie Monster fairly regularly. And a lot of them are at the moment around Ayton, because I'm pretty down on DeAndre Ayton and his lack of energy and effort and all sorts of things. So who, and this is a 17 league, so we're really just looking at if either of these guys are top 50 players in a points league. Trading DeAndre Ayton to get Malik Monk in a league like that, I have no issues with that at all.
Absolutely. In addition to the issues you mentioned with Ayton, got a lottery pick in Donovan Clingan, who, once he's healthy, I'm sure they're going to want to have him on the floor a lot, especially after the trade deadline in the All-Star break. So, if you can get Malik Monk for him, I would do that with no hesitation.
Yep. All right, question here from The Answer. What do we think of Maxi rest of season? We need Dan Titus on, don't we, to get his unbiased opinion. 76ers won't shut down, but Embiid not playing at all. I mean, is Maxi someone – because in theory, not having Embiid there and Paul George is sort of – he plays more than he doesn't play, but he's questionable again with his knee. Is Maxi someone that you'd be looking to move at the moment, or do we just think that he is sort of the alpha the rest of the way? Because obviously his efficiency is not as good when he's being forced to do more.
Yeah, I think I would hold on to him for that reason. The one thing you kind of consider is that their first-round pick is only top six protected. Oklahoma City gets it. if they're outside of the top six. So if there's more news on Embiid beyond today's news where they're like, we have to shut him down, then I think we could see a pivot from Philadelphia in hopes of protecting their pick for what appears to be a pretty loaded 2025 draft class. So I can see that. In terms of potential targets, I think you're probably looking at like a second rouner, someone who gives you second round value for Maxey. He's been slightly below that, but we've seen him play a lot better than he has this season. So I think that's where I'd kind of look in terms of, you know, value for a trade for Tyrese Maxey at this point.
All right, let's have a look. We've got a follow-up one there from for the Ayton points league question. So if Ayton isn't able to be moved, would you move Giddy to get Monk? So would you have Malik Monk over Josh Giddy in a points league? I think I'd still go Monk.
Yeah, I think this one's a lot closer. Yeah, just because Giddy's in a situation where it isn't difficult to see a scenario in which his value increases. Like if they were to move Zach LaVine and Nikola Vucevic, like that usage is going to have to go somewhere. And I think he'd be one of the guys who would potentially be able to absorb it. So that's a little bit closer, but I'd still go with Malik Monk.
Okay, question from Paul. Would we trade CJ McCollum for Monk or someone like OG punting threes? So I guess if we're looking at those three players, if we just look at McCollum, Monk and OG, who would you prefer? OG has been really frustrating the last month. His offense is so inconsistent. How would you rank those players? I mean, I know ranking is tough, but do your best.
Yeah, I think I prefer Malik because in addition to OG's recent struggles, he's usually been good for one extended absence a year. I have to pull this up. I'm not really sure. I think he's got like 170 game season over the last five or something to that effect. Not even. He hasn't played 70 games in a season since his rookie year. He's got a couple over 65, but that's about it. Thus far, he's played in 42 games, which is a really good start for him in terms of his availability. But with the way that the minutes are distributed in New York or not, I'm a bit concerned that there may come a point, you know, where he has to miss a few games because of an injury. So that would be my issue with him. Malik Monk, I think this is a tougher question than the others that we had, but I'd probably take him over McCollum or Ananobi in this scenario, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think I'm probably on Monk there as well. OG, even his defensive numbers haven't been great in the last week to 2 weeks. There was a period there where the offense was up and down, but he was getting blocks, he was getting steals, and that's fallen off a little bit. So I think I'd probably go Monk there as well. This is an interesting one, Matt Carmody. J-Dub or Şengün in a 9-cat head-to-head. Okay. So who would you rather there? That's a tough one for me. Yeah. Who would I go? I mean, have you got clear thoughts on this one or is it very close?
I think it's close, but because of the injuries to the front court, I'd probably lean J-Dub here. We've seen him have to play center at times. They've been able to do a little bit more getting the other Jalen Williams back, and then Brandon Carlson gave him some good minutes last night. But I don't think either one of those guys is going to do enough to where Mark Daigneault doesn't say, you know, let's put J-Dub at the five for a couple extended stretches here, because he's not the tallest player, but he's got really good length and athleticism. So I think the circumstances right now would probably have me leaning J-Dub over Şengün slightly.
Yeah, I think I'd go him slightly as well. It is close. I guess relating to this question, and we mentioned Amen Thompson earlier when we were looking at the Zion, I think it was the Zion trades, and one of them was Zion for Amen Thompson. What are your thoughts on Amen Thompson rest of season? Because I get questions about him. Obviously, Tari Eason returned yesterday and played 24 minutes, I think. Mm-hmm. But Jabari Smith is out for another month or whatever we're looking at here. Do we think that Amen Thompson is just a top 50 kind of a player rest of season?
I think he can be. You know, even with the lack of three-point production, what he does defensively, rebounder, as a facilitator too. You know, his ability to kind of – I think it's also helped, you know, their guards who aren't the best shooters percentage-wise to have him on the floor. I think it's a better fit for that offense than Jabari Smith was when healthy. So I think he certainly does have top 50 potential here rest of the season.
All right, so this is the we talked about Hartenstein and what we think he can do. Do you think he can be a 12 and 12 kind of a player with Chet back? Because I think his rebounding takes a hit.
Yeah.
That's probably one. Because 12 rebounds, I'm not sure he gets to 12 rebounds. I think he'll be a double-double, close to a double-double, but maybe closer to 10 rebounds with – he gets sneaky assists and then – just lucks his way into two combined steals and blocks. Do you think that's sort of realistic for what we're looking at once Chet is back? Because we do have to remember that Chet is not just going to come back and play 32 minutes a night. They're going to ramp him up and build him up.
I think it is realistic. You know, the rebounding may take a hit while Chet's on the floor, but Isaiah's really good on the offensive glass. Like, he can get you three or four per game. And I think that's a big part of the battle in terms of approaching the 12 rebounds per game. So I think that is realistic for him once Chet is back in the lineup.
All right, Steve. Norm Powell. I get questions about him as well because Kawhi is back. Yeah. He's not back every game, but he's back. And he's not playing his full allotment of minutes yet. But where do we think – because Norm Powell has been one of the more surprising players this season. I mean, we thought he'd be good, but he's been better than I think any of us thought he would be. So where do you sort of view him long-term? Do you think he takes a significant hit if and when Kawhi is back to full health?
I don't, just because of how well he's played in. I think in years past, they had a big three, so to speak, you know, with Kawhi, Harden, and Paul George. Now Norman's part of it if you want to go that far. If you don't, he's still number three, maybe even a number two scoring option, depending on how much James wants to score as opposed to facilitate. So I don't think he's going to take much of a hit at all, to be honest with you.
I've had, as I said, questions about Norm Powell. I can see a world where he ends up leading this team in scoring, even with Kawhi and James Harden back. Yeah. Maybe it's a stretch, but I do think that we've seen a shift in mentality from James Harden the last couple of years where he is looking to be more of a facilitator. And Kawhi, I just don't know if he wants to go out there and be the dominant number one option. I think the fact that they have Norm Powell there, they're very appreciative of having a consistent, reliable perimeter scorer. So do you think Powell can still be the number one scorer on this team? Maybe not every night, but from time to time?
I do, because, in addition to those guys you mentioned, you also have Ivica Zubac they can call on, for offensive production. So I think that gives Kawhi even more room to kind of pace himself offensively and to make sure he's in the proper physical, space once we get to the spring ahead of the playoffs. So I think it's certainly possible for Norman Powell to maintain what he's done this far.
All right, we'll just do one more. This is that points sort of related one again. And I know because this is a very active league, Monk or Westbrook? So more, I guess, broader topic here. What do you think of Westbrook this season? And he's taken advantage of the Aaron Gordon injury, obviously, and moved into the starting lineup. Do you think he sticks as a starter? And if so, either way, do you think he can be as good as he has been moving forward?
I don't think he will. This is something we discussed on our show too, like with Aaron Gordon's injury. I don't know if they rushed him back the first time he had the calf strain, but he was playing starters minutes the second game back. I don't think they're going to do that this time around. So you may be able to get a little bit more time with Russ as a starter right now. But I think for rest of the season, I think I'd prefer Malik Monk just because who's going to replace him in that starting lineup? Like Keon Ellis isn't, Kevin Huerter isn't. So I think his position is far more secure than Russell Westbrook's. He'll still be key, but I think he's going to take more of a hit as the season progresses.
Yeah, Westbrook, we're sort of just waiting for him to fall off, but he hasn't.
He's been good.
He has been very good, which is surprising. All right, you've got places to go and things to do. We've hit the half hour. So just give people a quick plug of what's going on over at Roto World and in your world.
Yeah, just more of the usual. We've got our weekly Q&A on Tuesdays with myself and Noah Rubin. Got the Roto World basketball show on Wednesdays with myself, Noah, and Dan Titus Yahoo. Got daily columns about waiver wire pickups and things of that sort. Some schedule analysis coming out pretty soon too.
All right. Well, I'm jumping into Dan's fundraiser show. Are you in that? Was your name on that list? It's a long list.
Yeah, I won't be able to make it, unfortunately, just because I've got prior commitments with work. But
yeah. He's got enough people in there to keep the show going because there's a lot. So, I'll probably look to, as I've sort of spoken to you through the chat, probably looking to cycle through you, Noah, and Michael Waterloo. So have you back on in a few weeks to do another episode if that works out with your busy schedule. So I appreciate you jumping on. Go and follow Raf on Blue Sky and Twitter. You same handle on both, at Raphael.
Same handle on both. I don't use Twitter anymore.
I use it for sort of messaging and but I post across both platforms now. I think the migration is happening. It's slow, but it seems to be moving across. I still don't find Blue Sky as active as Twitter. Do you sort of find that as well?
Similar. I think it's just going to take time. I think if you get more like actual team and league accounts migrating over, I think that's when we'll see like the true shift in terms of people and activity.
So anyway, we're getting there. It's good. All right, well, I'm going to let you go. I'm going to go and do some chores before I jump into that next show. Thanks again for jumping on. Remember to follow Raf, follow me, follow FBI Basketball. I'm Adam King. He is Raphael Johnson. This has been the Balls Deep Trade Talk Show. Until next time, catch up.
You just listened to another episode from the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us. And for more information about joining our community, please check out our website at FBIBasketball.com.